Hello, everybody. Welcome to another episode of Supernatural George. I'm Mittens, and today we are going to be watching Season 3, Episode 7, Fresh Blood, written by Sarah Gamble and directed by Kim Manners. I know a lot of people love this episode just because of how badass Sam is in it, and our hearts are breaking for the situation that Dean's in about his own self-worth and purpose in life. That this episode marks approximately the halfway point, so about 6 months out from when he made his deal. And yet it ends up encapsulating what happens in the season finale metaphorically very, very well, which we'll discuss as we walk through the episode, but the parallel of Sam to Gordon and the parallel of Dean to the vampire who has lost everything, and he's like described his life as a living hell, and asked Dean what could be worse than losing your family. And Dean said, well, there's actual hell. And yet that comment that reflects on Dean's personal circumstance, that he lost his family but was able to save it, but as a result, he's going to hell. Yeah, it gives Dean a little bit of insight into his own situation through a probably unwanted comparison, but it's about time something started shaking him to wake up and look at what his deal really means for him. And this is sort of the beginning steps of him acknowledging that. Even if he can't say it out loud yet, he's hearing what Sam is trying to tell him in this episode, which, good, but yes, also Sam gets to be a badass. The Winchesters get betrayed, but ultimately get revenge for stupid reasons that should never have come to pass because just the frustration of their lives right now is just overwhelming. They've got to face down Vampire Gordon. I'm probably going to be quicker than usual with tonight's episode just because I feel like dirt. I have a really bad headache, and it's making it very hard to focus. So if I start to lose the thread, I apologize, but I'm going to try and keep this one concise and to the point as much as possible. So bear with me. If I start getting weird, apologies. We do have some really cool supplemental material for this episode. We have casting sides for Dixon, the vampire whose family had been hunted to near extinction, and that he was trying to replenish his family when he got caught by Gordon and the Winchesters, and everything just went sideways and completely off the rails for him. But we have those casting sides, which were from an early draft, but we have two full drafts of the entire script. We have the network draft, which is the pre-production draft. This is what's sent to the network for approval. Changes are made based on what the network requires, sometimes due to production requirements. Then we have the production draft, which is the draft that they go to casting and begin production on about 2 weeks before filming begins. In addition to that, we have the blue revision pages, which is 24 pages of the script that was revised once production began. Whether or not they'd started filming yet or were about to start filming, they made 24 pages of revisions. Sometimes it's just a change of a sentence or a phrase or even just a word on a page. But there were 24 pages that had revisions from the production draft before those pages were filmed. And then in addition to that, we have 11 pages of pink revisions, which come after the blue revisions. They're one day later only, but 11 changes had to be made from the blue revisions page to the pink revisions. So this is why when we talk about having the production draft, the white pages, the original production draft, and seeing that things that happened on screen are different, it's not that they decided on set, oh, we're going to ad-lib this whole scene, or we're going to change this scene to be this way. No, the writer is like in constant reproduction of the script to fit necessary changes. Sometimes they couldn't find a location. Sometimes they decided that they needed a slightly different take on something. Sometimes the speech they had written was too long to fit for time, and they have to rework that information into other scenes somehow that still haven't been filmed yet. You know, because some of these have already been filmed at this point. This is not something that actors can just decide on a whim, or a director can't just, oh yeah, let's just have them do this other type of scene or whatever. If it's different from the production draft, it's because it went through all of these processes. Now, sometimes you'll hear stories about, oh yeah, they ad-libbed that on set, and the director and the editor thought it was great, so we left it in. That's usually like a line or a phrase here and there, like a little bumper that somebody says something funny and they keep it, or that adds to the flavor of the scene. But it's rare compared to when you see that there were 24 pages of revisions for the blue draft and then an additional 11 for the pink draft. So that's the sort of changes that happen when you see a vastly different episode from what the production draft looks like. Because we have a lot of white drafts, a lot of production drafts. And every time we post one, it circulates with, oh my God, they made all these choices on set. And like, no, they didn't. That's not how it works. But it's fun to think, to know where they, based on stories we've heard from Jensen, Jared, Misha, stories about like, oh yeah, that line was ad-libbed, or it had to be reworked day of filming. And we do hear those, but they are so, so rare. Because we've heard all the same stories about that like 9 times now. But this is an episode where we have multiple different drafts of the script. So it makes it really useful to study. And if you're interested in the production side of television production or the writing room side of things, how that process works. You can kind of see it happening, the evolution of the script from its original network draft through the production draft, through draft revisions during production. If that's your thing and you're totally interested in that, this is a great selection of materials for you to look through. It's not really all that necessary for what I do here. So we are going to get back to the actual episode itself, because that's what we're here for. I think the only other relevant side note for this episode is that the woman who plays Lucy, if you watched Buffy, you'll recognize the actress, is the same actress who played Harmony on Buffy. And her name in this episode is Lucy from Dracula. Lucy is unwittingly turned into a vampire by Dracula and ends up having to be killed. So, kind of on the nose naming for her. But yeah, little nod to Buffy there with the actress. On that note, let's dive into this episode where we learn how living for revenge can turn you into the monster you'd spent your life hunting. Basically, revenge mission, bad. But also, how you live once you feel you've become the monster or are beyond hope says a lot about you, too. The then segment opens, as is the theme this season, on John's grave and Dean talking about the family legacy, killing as many evil sons of bitches as they can. Then we get the refresher on Bella. Then we get the refresher on Gordon. We get scenes from Hunted where he's got Dean tied up and he fights with Sam and he tells Dean that he knows all about Sam's visions. He doesn't believe Sam's human. He believes he's an evil monster that needs to be killed, which is what put Gordon in this circumstance in the first place. And then we have Gordon in prison talking with Kubrick. Kubrick now believes that Sam Winchester is evil and must die too. The end of the then segment that brings us to now is Gordon telling Kubrick that he needs to get out of prison. And then we hit now, and surprise, Gordon is out of prison. I believe this is the same railroad trestle bridge from the episode Hook Man, where she's out on her little date getting groped by her boyfriend, I guess. And he ends up dangling over the car dead, thanks to the hook man. But I think this is the same bridge where they're shooting this now, even though it's absolutely a totally different scene. Cool location reuse, though. We see a fancy car, Mercedes, parked under the bridge, and Bella Talbot walks toward it with a little briefcase that we have to assume is filled with money. And she is about to get into her car when she sees the reflection of someone coming up behind her, turns, and is very confident in saying, "Oh, it's rude to sneak up on people." And there's no geniality at all in Gordon as he confirms that she is Bella Talbot. She apparently does not recognize Gordon. Even through all of her dealings with the supernatural over the years, she's never met him face to face or knew him face to face, but she was surprised that he was out of prison. But you could see her face fall as soon as she hears the name Gordon Walker, like, oh shit, this is not somebody I want to be crossing here. And she tries to turn it into a joke, like, oh, they let you out early for good behavior? And it doesn't even crack a smile from him. He does not want to play any games at all with her. He's come to her for something very specific. Meanwhile, Bella's putting her briefcase in her car and rummaging around under the guise of just getting into her car or whatever. And Gordon holds up a small gun and says, "You're looking for this?" And she gives up looking through the car because, yes, that's what she was looking for. Gordon's already rooted it out of her car and she is unarmed, or as unarmed as anyone gets on the show. Gordon confirms that he knows that she was just in Massachusetts with the Winchesters, and he asks her where they are now. And she says, "I don't think I know." He pulls a gun on her, points it right at her, and says, "Think a little harder." She's between a rock and a hard place here. So Bella realizes she's probably going to end up having to tell him something about the Winchester's current location, even if she doesn't know it exactly at the moment. She does know how to reach them. But she asks first, "What's so pressing that for you to get in touch with them, to find them?" And Gordon just absolute matter of fact says, "Sam Winchester's the Antichrist." Bella confirms that, yeah, she's heard something along those lines. And Gordon assures her that it is true. As soon as Gordon says it's true, Bella continues that she heard it from her good friend, the Tooth Fairy, who heard it from the Easter Bunny, or vice versa. I don't know, whatever. But she's basically questioning his sanity. Where'd you come up with such a ridiculous thing? She doesn't believe him. Which, I don't think she'd be taunting him while he has a gun pointed at her if she actually believed it, you know? She'd be like, "Oh, yes, you're right, here." She tries to bring it back down to a business deal level again to calm him down a bit. She's like, "You make me an offer and you'll find me highly cooperative." And he lowers his gun and then says, "You tell me where they are or I'll kill you right now," and puts the gun right back in her face. This is not a negotiation that's going anywhere for Bella. She does hold the card, though, that she's the one who knows how to find where Sam and Dean are, and he doesn't, if he came to her for help. So he realizes that, yes, he's going to have to deal with her. He offers her $3,000, and she's like, "No." As he lowers his gun, she sees a mojo bag on his belt, and she's like, "Or you just give me that and we'll call it even." And he tells her, "No, that's a century old," and she agrees, "It's priceless, and it's probably what keeps him alive during hunts, if it's that powerful magic, you know? Protective magic, hide you magic, whatever has kept him alive all these years hunting is probably that mojo bag." And she wants it in exchange for the location of Sam and Dean. So already, he's decided that this is a fair trade. I mean, he's not happy about it, but he does give it to her because that's how desperate he is to kill Sam and Dean, that he's willing to part with something that he considers protective. And then everything in his life basically goes to hell in the next 3 days. He should have held on to that mojo bag and just given up hunting for Sam and Dean. But his conviction that Sam was the Antichrist absolutely overrode every self-protective measure. She pulls her phone right out and calls Dean and just asks him, hey, where are you? And he apparently tells her, because she tells Gordon. But strangely enough, Dean actually does tell her where he is. Like, what business is it of yours? Why would she need to know this information? Was this just because there was some sort of friendly feeling toward her after they parted after their last case? Why would he have just handed that information over to her? And yet he did. And then we cut to the title card. After the title card, we open on Sam and Dean actively on a hunt. Flashlights out, dark alleys. They come across a blood stain on the ground. They're clearly looking for something or someone. Beside the blood is the man whose blood it is, bleeding out from a ghastly wound on his neck. They go over to him. Sam's like, yeah, we'll get you some help. We'll get you some help. Don't worry. And Dean's like, where'd she go? Where'd she go? And the man chokes out and points, and Dean runs off in that direction while Sam stays with the guy. And at this point, savvy viewers of Supernatural are going, hey, that looks like a vampire wound. I bet it's a vampire they're hunting. Plus, Gordon Walker's here, so that screams vampires. Dean chases her a little bit longer, machete in one hand, and through a much narrower alley that leads to sort of a dead end with industrial-looking area. He looks around and doesn't see her, so he gets a crazy idea. He rolls up his sleeve, slices his own arm so he's bleeding, and makes himself bait for her. Dean then starts taunting, like, smell that? It tastes even better. Come on. He even holds up the machete when she finally steps out of the shadows and then drops it to the ground. Like, look, I'm not even going to kill you for charging me. I'm offering myself up as lunch. Come and get it. And she does. And then he immediately begins fighting her off because his goal wasn't to behead her, but to subdue her. He's got a syringe full of dead man's blood and he injects it into her neck. Dean, man. And that's the exact response that Sam has when he... I'm sorry, my cats are being assholes again. They're playing tag on the stairs. Whatever. Sam is just as indignant as I am about how Dean is valuing his own safety. Dean's just cavalierly like, well, it worked, didn't it? And Sam's like, yeah, I guess, but you cut it a little close there. Please do not do this. We then cut to a room that the walls are lined with mattresses. I don't know, were they trying to keep the sound out? Was this room just already like this? I don't know. But they have her tied to a chair, and they're interrogating her, asking where her nest is. And she's like, I have no idea what you're talking about. And eventually segues into explaining, I took something, and I'm freaking out, and I can't come down. Sam and Dean are really confused at first, like, what are you talking about? You took something? And she begins to explain that she was at a club, and somebody offered her a drug and she drank it. And Dean's like, was it red and thick? She's like, yes, yes. And she doesn't realize that she drank vampire blood. She made herself into a vampire. She has no idea. I think it's interesting that Sam, in order to get her to talk, promised that they would let her go if she told them what had happened to her. And Dean had to agree with this. He makes a, like, okay, whatever you say, Sam. We're really not letting this woman go, but we can lie to her, I suppose. But there's no way they can let her go. She has no idea she's a vampire. She has no idea what she took. Barely knows the man who turned her. He went out to get her something to eat, and she got so hungry that she broke out and went on her little rampage. And as Dean tells her, you know, we've been following a sloppy trail of bodies all around town. She begs them to help her come down from, she believes that she's just on a drug, that none of what she's experienced is real. And Sam and Dean have to tell her, you know, it is real. And you've killed two people and almost killed a third. They leave the room and confer. And Dean's like, we can't just let her go. We've got to kill her because she has no idea what she's become. And even if Dixon, the vampire who turned her, had come right back with blood for her, I have a feeling that she would not have been happy about having been turned into a vampire. When she thought she was just in it for like a drug experience that was supposed to last a few hours. Like, I don't think she was committed to an eternity as a vampire. But Sam agrees with Dean. They can't just let her go. Dean goes in and kills her. And I always wonder what vampires like this must experience when they reach purgatory after they die. Like, now that we know about purgatory, what must be their experience in purgatory? Like, can you imagine having no instinct, no experience, or not even any knowledge of what you are or why you're there, but all of a sudden it's just monsters everywhere all the time and you're one of them? Like, yikes, what an existence. What a horrible, horrible fate for somebody. We then cut to the hospital where the man that Sam and Dean had found injured but not dead is recovering now. Not Sam and Dean, but Gordon and Kubrick walk in to interrogate him. He's like, I already talked to the cops. And they hold out their badges, their FBI. They ask him to explain who attacked him, and he tells them that she was crazy, like super PCP strength. They ask if she bled on him, and the man's like, no, she just gnawed on me. And he's really sure that she did not bleed on him. Gordon says, well, that's good, because this woman has a very dangerous virus. And the guy starts freaking out. Well, she bit me. She bit me. And Kubrick explains, no, you have to ingest the blood in order to catch the virus. And the guy is just like, oh, well, that's a relief. Okay. Gordon's like, yeah, good thing too, or we'd have had to kill you. And the guy starts to laugh like he's making a joke. And Kubrick and Gordon are just glaring at him like, dead serious. They would have killed him right then and there if he had said that she bled on him. But he also describes the people who chased her off. One of them was real tall. And of course, we know that's Sam. But seriously, never invite Gordon and Kubrick to your parties because they are just the least amount of fun it's possible for a human being to be. Whilst Gordon and Kubrick are trying to catch up with Sam and Dean are over at Spider, the club where Lucy met the man who gave her the weird drug. Mm-hmm. We get a little bit of exposition from Dean that three blondes had gone missing from that club over the last recent while, including Lucy. Even if she wasn't able to give them information about the guy who drugged her, let's just keep calling it that, their only recourse now is to stake out the club and wait for some skeevy guy in a leather jacket to come try and pick up another blonde woman. And just as they're saying that, they see a skeevy guy in a leather jacket walking out with a blonde woman down into an alley where he has her willingly ready to take this drug that he's about to offer her. An eyedropper full of, well, we know it's vampire blood. Let's just call it vampire blood. So Dean catches up with him right as he's about to drop it in her mouth and they save her life. Dean starts wailing on the guy. Sam tells the woman to run. And then Dean gets thrown into a wall and they end up chasing the guy out of the alley and come face to face with Gordon and Kubrick. And they may have been hunting a vampire, but they were real quick to turn tack. And Gordon, of course, wants to kill Sam. Primary mission in life for him. Rather than having backup for a hunt, even if it's unwanted backup in the form of Gordon, a little bit of a shocker there. Gordon and Kubrick both pull out guns and just start firing on them. Dean and Sam are huddled in another alley, and Dean's like, okay, I'll draw him off. And Sam's like, what? What are you talking about? No. But Dean's already jumped out of the alley and drawn fire and initiated a pursuit because I think Dean realizes that Sam is the target here. Like last time they ran into Gordon, he's like, I'm going to draw them away. You get to safety. But he didn't even give Sam a moment to get with the program. He just bolted without hesitating because that's what Dean always does for Sam. He will always protect Sam that way. We saw him acting crazy in the earlier scene how he drew the vampire out, but I think this is very different. He may be acting like his life doesn't mean anything. And I'm sorry, I'm back now. I have no idea what I was talking about before, but my cats were making so much noise that I couldn't even hear myself recording. So, little bastards. Anyway, apparently they're going to be an issue. This is what happens when you get kittens. They have no manners at all, and they're crazy. I was talking about Dean and how he would, this wasn't like a self-destruct instinct or the thrill of almost being killed. To him, this is just getting these two crazy people who he knows are targeting Sam off his brother and being a distraction. And while Dean distracted them, Sam was able to get away. So it worked. Yeah, it was stupid and crazy and reckless. I think it's something Dean would have done 2 years ago as well, rather than after he made his deal. That's just who Dean is when it comes to Sam, even if it's manifesting in a much more reckless way now. But because Gordon brought backup on this hunt, Kubrick goes scampering after Dean. Dean just had bounded up over a wall and into like a parking garage. And Kubrick's like, it takes him like 3 times as long to climb up over the wall and into the garage. But so Dean's got a massive head start on him. But Gordon is going to stay focused on Sam. He knows that Dean's not going to sneak up behind him. He's just focused on getting Sam, who he believes is just trapped in this alley. When he finally gets to where we had seen Sam and Dean hiding before, Sam's not there. Gordon sweeps the whole section of alley out, and as he's turning to walk away, someone else jumps down and tackles him and knocks him out. Dixon, the vampire. We get back to the room where Lucy had been killed, and Sam is just sitting there. This is their motel, apparently. It looks halfway abandoned, and yes, all those mattresses are just leaning up against the windows and walls for some reason, instead of, like, being used as mattresses. Are they just crashing at some abandoned motel? I mean, there's lights and power and stuff, but man, this place is horrible. This is horrible even for them. But Sam is unhappy when Dean finally saunters in. Sam's like, where have you been? And Dean's like, yeah, sorry, stopped for a slice. And he taps his belly like he stopped for pizza somewhere along the way. As if this was just another day for him and casually strolling in. And Sam's justifiably angry at Dean for being so careless. Dean's just like, yeah, but it was pretty badass running right at the weapons. But they quickly move on from that to the fact that, yes, Gordon is out of prison, which is terrible news. And Sam asks the logical question, but how did they know where to find us? And Dean figures it out right quick. Dean immediately calls Bella and is like, when you called me yesterday, it wasn't just to thank us for saving your life, was it? And she doesn't even hesitate. She's like, nope, Gordon Walker paid me to tell him where you were. Dean is justifiably angry at that. Why would you do that? And she's like, well, he had a gun on me at the time. And Dean's like, well, you could have picked up the phone and let us know that he was coming. And she replies, well, there's only one of him and two of you. She didn't think it would be a terrible problem, that she did mean to call them eventually. Dean's like, well, there were two of them. And she realizes that she has screwed up royally. If she didn't screw up with Gordon, well, she just screwed up with Dean because he has vowed that his next mission, should he survive this vampire encounter and hunt with Gordon, is that he's going to come kill her. And she believes that he is 100% serious about that. She looks more afraid after she hangs up the phone with Dean than she did talking to Gordon, which tells you something about what she believes Dean is capable of after getting to know him a little better. But if Sam and Dean have all the mattresses and box springs lining the walls of their motel room or wherever it is they're crashing, we see an empty bed with no mattress and box springs, just the springs of the bed frame that Gordon Walker is now tied to in this even worse rundown place where Dixon took him. Across the room from where Gordon is tied up, there's two blonde women dangling by their wrists, who've clearly been turned into vampires. Dixon comes in with a jar full of blood and lets them drink from it. And he tells them, yes, I know you're uncomfortable. This is only temporary until you get used to it, you know, so then I could let you down. And we have to wonder, is that where Lucy was when she escaped? Was she tied up like they are, or was she less bound up, or did he just make some sort of mistake with her? Did he even get as far as that room with her? Who knows? But regardless, we have to assume she escaped from somewhere in that area. Gordon asks who these women are, and he replies that they're family, and he questions that, like, you always keep your family shackled up. And it's clear that Dixon has a grudge against Gordon. He's heard of him, at least. He knows what Gordon does. He's been driven to turn these women because his original family had been hunted and killed, and he's got to keep his family alive. But he blames Gordon and hunters like him for the fact that vampires are dying out. As he's tied up there, Gordon's like, your people aren't going extinct because of us. You're going extinct because you're mindless, bloodthirsty animals. And that's seriously what Gordon thinks about all vampires. And honestly, Dixon doesn't seem like that bad a guy, except for the way he's going about gathering new family members. But he's also a recent trauma victim. His entire other family had just been slaughtered. And he's just doing what he has to survive and not be entirely alone in the world. Yeah, it would be nice to get consent before he turns people into what he is. But desperation makes people do stupid things sometimes, and he doesn't seem to be the kind of guy who tries to draw attention from hunters, even if he has been being sloppy in recent days here to have drawn enough attention about missing women in a bar. Like, there's better ways to go about this, sir. But he's also not the mindless, ravening killer that Gordon is accusing him of being. And that Gordon kind of is when it comes to vampires. Like, takes one to know one, Gordon. But after Gordon completely insults him, his family, who he is, his people, the guy changes his mind. He was gonna feed Gordon to his two new vampire children. Well, no. He's decided he's gonna go out and get them something else to eat. He's gonna make Gordon into a vampire. Which... stellar plan there, moron. But he's angry. He's like, this is the best revenge. Turn him into this thing he hates. Yeah, bad idea. Back in their motel room, they're doing weapons maintenance. Dean's sharpening his machete. Sam's cleaning a gun. And Sam mentions that the vampire that they originally were hunting is still out there. They've got to stop him. Which Gordon should have been more focused on that first and then worrying about Sam and Dean. But that was what they were in town for anyway. It wasn't to kill Lucy, the random woman who got turned. It was to kill the man who kept turning them. That's their mission. But Dean's like, but first things first. We got to worry about Gordon. They've got to confront the fact that as far as they know, at this moment, they have to kill Gordon. It wasn't enough to send him to prison. He got out of prison. He's not going to stop hunting Sam. They have to stop him, which is not something they normally do. They normally do not kill people. They leave people to human justice systems. But Gordon has become their job, even if they, as far as they know, he's still human. Luckily for them, he's not. But they have to moral dilemma over it anyway. It's Sam that agrees, and Dean is surprised by this. He's like, you're not gonna complain that he's human and we can't kill him? And Sam's the one who comes flat out and says it. He's not gonna stop hunting us. He's done trying to give him a chance to walk away. They've given him chances to walk away, and he has not taken them. He's not gonna stop until they're dead, or he is. Sam does not have a moral dilemma with this anymore. As they're dilemma-ing about it, though, Dean's phone rings, and it's Bella. She starts talking real fast. because she knows that Dean's going to hang up on her if she doesn't deliver goods quickly. She's not playing around anymore. She's like, I don't want you to be hunting me. I don't want to die like that. I'm doing what I can to make it up to you. Here's information about Gordon Walker's exact location. And Dean's like, you're 100 miles away. How the hell can you know that? And she's like, hello. You know her methods of using the talking board to talk to the other side to find her magical goods. Well, she used them to find Gordon Walker's exact location. She said the spirit that she spoke with had one more message. Whatever you do, just drop everything, get out of town, do not go after Gordon, for whatever that's worth, and then hangs up. But that puts a curious spin on things. What is up with Gordon Walker that he would be advised to not go after him? How is he different than he was 5 minutes ago, to Dean's understanding? Or is that just general good advice regarding Gordon? Because even going back to the first time they met him, that was basically Ellen's advice. Just stay the hell away from him. Which, honestly, they should have. We then get to see what becoming a vampire is like through the point of view of Gordon Walker. Chained up by his wrists across the room from the two women who are passively waiting for Dixon to come back. And he's just cold sweating. You can hear the music. Sounds like a heartbeat, like a very loud heartbeat. And you can see the fury in him. And like Lucy said at the beginning of the episode, lights were too bright. You see him react to the neon light outside the warehouse where he is. You see him react to the ticking of a clock that is just as loud in his mind as the heartbeat music. You know, that everything is too much. Gordon uses that fury, though, to break his chains. He gets himself free. And across the room, one of the women asks, help us, please. Please help us. And Gordon looks over at them. And we don't see what happens yet. But you think for just a moment, is he going to show some humanity, some compassion? What's he going to do? No, he's going to be Gordon. We see him walking down the street, cowering away from bright lights. A car drives past and it looks like it causes him physical pain, the noise, the light. And then he sees a man changing his tire and has to turn and puts his hands on a plate glass window, and we can see him in reflection, that he's looking at himself, wrestling with himself over what he's become and plotting what he's going to do next. What is he going to do with this? Because clearly he has not given up on his mission to kill Sam Winchester. That's still his priority. Except he's got other needs now. And one of them is eating people. We see Gordon's reflection in the window as he watches his fangs come in for the first time. And then back to the man changing his tire. He's finished. Puts his flat in the trunk. All his tools go back in the trunk. He gets in the front seat of his car, and then Gordon pops up in the back seat and pulls him into the back seat and just does the vampire lunch buffet thing, which I find is an interesting comparison to a number of other people we've seen almost become vampires on this show. Even before Dean knew there was a cure and he was being caused pain by the lights and the noises and stuff, he didn't immediately resort to eating somebody, even when he didn't even know that there was a cure yet, or that he couldn't be cured if he fell apart and ate somebody. He still resisted and overcame that urge. And it's like Gordon just didn't even try. He deliberately hunted this guy and ate him. So it's kind of like Gordon believes this about vampires and believes that they're just killer, animalistic, unthinking beasts. And yet Dean proves that's not the case. Anyway, I just needed to point that out, just because a lot of it going in is what you understand and believe and what you allow yourself to give in to. Dean just really has a strength of will that not a lot of people have, probably. Definitely not Gordon. Sam and Dean, though, eventually do find the warehouse where Gordon had been, except Gordon is long gone, as we know, and they find Dixon, the vampire, on his knees in front of his two newly turned children vampires. They're still hanging by their wrists, but Gordon helped them by removing their heads. Dixon doesn't even turn around as Sam and Dean approach from behind. He's like, go ahead, do it, kill me. And that's unusual. Usually vampires put up at least a little bit of a fight. Sam asks, what happened here? It's clear that this guy did not tear the heads off these women. Dixon replies, Gordon Walker. I never should have brought a hunter here. And this is where Dixon begins laying out his desperation. He wanted some kind of revenge against Gordon and brought him there. He never should have done that. He shouldn't have given in to that urge. Dean starts off completely unsympathetic. I don't even want to know why you would do anything. Dixon continues anyways. The way he phrases it this time, he describes it as, I've lost everyone I've ever loved and I'm facing eternity alone. And then asks Dean, can you think of a worse hell? And Dean's like, well, there's hell. That might be worse than an eternity alone. But honestly, no. We learn later on that Dean will eventually agree with him when he's in solitary confinement in season 12. He tells Mary that we had to break out. We had to make this deal with Billy because what we were experiencing there was worse than what I experienced in hell. Just being completely isolated like that. Regardless of hell or no hell, at this point, losing everyone you ever loved is what Dean traded his own soul for Sam. He's already lost his mother. He's already lost his father. He couldn't lose anything else. He described his actions and what he was doing trying to rebuild his family. He's like, I know I did the wrong thing. I just didn't care anymore. He adds, you know what it's like when you just don't give a damn? It's like being dead already. And honestly, let's look back at how Dean's been living his life since he made that deal. It's like he's stopped caring about himself. And in doing so, it's like he's dead already. And again, let's frame this in the form of, had season 3 continued to its natural 22 episode end, and Dean was redeemed from hell, these would have all been interesting object lessons instead of exactly what happens at the season finale. And again, Dixon's like, just kill me. But Sam has gone over to inspect the two women's bodies and advises Dean that the heads were not cut off, they were ripped off, which is sending up all the red flags for Dean. And Sam has figured it out. He turned Gordon into a vampire. Meanwhile, back at Kubrick's camper, still filled with Jesus art, Kubrick's doing gun maintenance, and there's a dog barking outside, and this gets him a little bit curious as to what's going on outside. He goes and looks out the window, and when he turns back around, Gordon's in the camper behind him. Like, how'd you sneak in there, Gordon? Vampire powers! Kubrick is moderately relieved to see Gordon. He thought he was dead and asks him if he's okay. And Gordon's like, not even a little bit. Kubrick asks what happened and Gordon's like, they turned me. And Kubrick closes his eyes in a moment of like prayer, we have to assume. Kubrick's like, you know what this means. And Gordon's like, yep, you have to kill me, but not yet. I have to do one more thing before you can kill me. I have to kill Sam Winchester. That is still his priority, even though he is now a vampire. He still can't let that go. Gordon sees the crucifix hanging up and walks toward it. Kubrick sort of follows him and listens to what he's saying. Gordon insists that, yes, he still needs to kill Sam Winchester. He's stronger, faster, he can finish him now. It's the one good thing to come out of this. It's the one last good thing he can do in the world. And Kubrick doesn't think that's a good idea at all. He's not going to let him leave the camper. And verbally agrees with Gordon. Yeah, yeah, that's one last good thing. But while he's talking, he's going over to grab a big old knife and tries to sneak back up on Gordon. just as he's about to hack at Gordon's neck, Gordon turns around and just jams a hand in his chest and kills Kubrick. I honestly don't know what Gordon expected going back there. Did he need Kubrick's help? Like, Gordon, you're a super-powered vampire dude now. Why do you need Kubrick to help you with this hunt? But he expected Kubrick to at least go along with his plan, I guess, and still have his backup? I don't know. I don't think he's really thinking straight at this point. After Kubrick is dead, Gordon apologizes, like, sincerely seeming. And then we're back at Sam and Dean's horrible motel room. Sam's studying a map. Dean comes back in and he says he's checked everywhere. He can't find any trace of Gordon. That's when Dean decides that he pulls out the Colt and starts loading it up with bullets that are definitely capable of killing a vampire, and tells Sam that now that they've smashed their cell phones and Gordon can't trace them by their phones, Sam should just stay put and Dean will go out and hunt Gordon. This is where Sam gets his angry out on Dean about being reckless, paraphrasing what the vampire had told them about how he had reached a point of desperation where it was like he was already dead. And Sam pulls that out. Oh, like you're already dead? And Dean's like, if the shoe fits. He has no argument against that. He's very clear on what his current status is and what he's got left. He's got an expiration date. Sam describes Dean's current attitude as a kamikaze trip, and Dean tries to make jokes, and Sam's just like, no, it's not funny. Sam refuses to let Dean just brush this off. He confronts him with the fact that he knows Dean is terrified, because this is how he always acts when he's terrified, putting on the showboat show. And on this level, Sam gets the performance that Dean always puts on for him in one way or another. This is performing Dean. This is Sam describing what performing Dean is. That he puts on this act, pretends like everything's okay all the time, even especially when he's terrified. And Sam can identify terror. He may not hit on all the other aspects of Dean's performance to him, and he may be in the dark about a lot of it that we will learn in the future, even just a few episodes from now. But he does understand this basic mask that Dean puts on of this cavalier that he's not afraid at all, and that this is what it looks like. He knows Dean is terrified that they're halfway through the year and he's got no idea how to break the deal, and he knows it's getting closer and closer and there's nothing he can do to stop it apparently, and he's terrified. Sam got it, and he's just asking Dean not to keep putting on this bravado performance, to just be his brother, to just be Dean. It's not even so much about don't be reckless, don't risk yourself, but just drop the performance. You don't have to act for me. Dean agrees. They make a new plan. Rather than Dean going out and hunting Gordon down all night long, they'll hole up through the night because it's still daylight, so Gordon is having a harder time getting around outdoors in the sunlight. But it's going to be dark soon. Dean's like, okay, well, we'll hole up. We'll cover our scent. We'll do everything we can to stop him from being able to find us, and we'll resume in the morning when it's safer. They barricade the door. They burn some of their anti-vampire scent weed stuff that John taught them about in the very first vampire episode ever, and hole up. Some time passes, and eventually Dean's phone rings. Sam says, you've had that phone 2 hours, Dean. Who'd you give the number to? Because remember, Sam smashed their old phones to stop Gordon from being able to use them to trace him. Well, turns out when Dean went out to get replacement phones, he didn't do a very good job of covering his tracks. Gordon scented him to the cell phone store where he picked it up. Gordon tells them, you should come find me. And Dean's like, well, you should come find us. What, are you afraid of us? I mean, we're just sitting here. And he puts on that bravado because it's an act for Gordon, not for Sam this time. And Gordon's like, yeah, I don't think so. The camera pans out and we see it before she speaks that he's got a hostage who begs for her life over the phone. So of course, Sam and Dean can't let Gordon hurt her. Dean begs Gordon not to do this, to let the girl go, and tells him, "You don't kill innocent people. You're still a hunter." And Gordon's like, "Nope, I'm a monster," and hangs up. So they've got 20 minutes to get down to where Gordon is, or this girl's gonna die. They get to the warehouse. Dean leads the way with the Colt in hand, and Sam follows behind with a machete. They find the woman first, tied to a piece of machinery. They untie her. Dean picks her up and tries to carry her out. As they're running out of the warehouse, though, a metal door drops after Dean runs through, but before Sam can. So now they're separated. Sam's on his own now, with nothing but a machete, waiting on Gordon Walker, who obviously wanted him separated like this. Sam thinks everything's gonna be okay until the lights go out. And then all of a sudden he can't see, but Gordon, with his vampire vision, can. And here's Gordon giving his little speech while he lets Sam just twist in the wind here and letting him suffer a little bit. But of course he's got to villain monologue. Gordon tells him, "You have no idea what it took me to get here. I lost everything." And it's like, yeah, just like what drove Dixon the vampire. He lost everything. So he was desperate enough to do anything. Gordon is now at that same point. But Gordon is okay with that because he's finally going to be able to kill Sam, the most dangerous thing he's ever hunted. Gordon tells Sam, "You're not human, Sam." And Sam's like, "Yeah, look who's talking." Sam tries to tell Gordon that he has a choice. He doesn't have to be a bloodthirsty killer. He can choose not to be, because Sam's known vampires who've made that choice and lived by that. It's not inherent to being a vampire. And Sam is trying to convince Gordon of that, but Gordon doesn't believe that. He's like, "Yeah, no, I have no choice." And Sam reminds him, "You didn't kill that girl." And Gordon's like, "Yeah, no, I didn't. I did something much worse." And then we cut back to Dean, bashing at the mechanism that would open the metal door again, trying to get it open to get in there to help Sam. And while he's distracted with that, the girl that he had rescued comes up to attack him because Gordon turned her into a vampire. She throws Dean to the ground like she's gonna kill him, but he manages to pull out the Colt and shoot her with it. And that's probably the fastest death by Colt scene in the entire series. Just shoot, no slow-mo, falls over dead. Little bit of crackly as lights as she dies, but that's it. Gordon tries to tell Sam as he's following him around, as Sam is blindly feeling around in the dark. Gordon's telling him, "I know what it feels like to be you now. We're the same now. I know what it feels like to have something evil inside of you. It's just too bad you won't do the right thing and kill yourself." But as soon as Gordon gets out that phrase again, "two last good things, killing you and then killing myself," he attacks Sam and Sam goes right through the wooden wall and they start fighting in a different room. But oh, right, on the other side of that wall is Dean with the Colt. Gordon whacks it away, throws Dean across the room, attacks Dean, bites his neck, and it's like, dude. Not even trying to resist the vampiric urges or punishment for Dean trying to stop him. Who knows? I have no idea. He wasn't trying to turn Dean. He was trying to kill him with his teeth. Like, okay, but he never tries to bite Sam. Like, is that the evil in Sam just not tasty? I don't know. These are the sorts of thoughts I have when I have a smashing headache. They continue fighting and while they do, Sam assembles a makeshift garrote out of razor wire, gets it wrapped around Gordon's neck, and very slowly beheads him with it. And man, that is just like physically improbable, but very badass. As Dean struggles to his feet, there's a sign by him that's one of those, you know, so many days without an accident signs. This one says the best previous record was 183 days. Safety is your responsibility and all this other stuff like that. But 183 days, it's half a year. So we're probably at the halfway mark of Dean's year. And this was just the set department's way of telling us that. Dean gets to throw it right back at Sam just a wee bit, joking about how he just charged a super vamped out Gordon with no weapon. That's pretty reckless, don't you think? And Sam's just like, yeah. Neither of them think this joke is particularly funny, but I do. In the aftermath, clearly a little bit more time has passed. They're parked along the side of the road in the woods. Dean's got the hood raised. They're listening to music. Got a cooler full of beer. Sam's just chilling by the side of the car. Dean's trying to figure out what's making a rattling noise in the car. Sam asks if he figured it out, and Dean's like, hey, wait a second. He gives Sam Auto Shop 101, like, this is the valve cover. These are the where the heads are, and the carburetor is on top, and confirming that Sam at least understands the basic parts of the car, and then he hands Sam the wrench. Like, no, you're gonna fix it. And Sam's like, what are you talking about? You barely let me drive it, let alone touch it in any other way. Dean's like, you're gonna need to know these things for the future. And now he's finally getting a chance to be the brother that Sam wanted him to be. And that's how the episode ends, with Dean taking a seat on the cooler and Sam removing the valve cover from the engine, looking for what's making the rattling noise. And yeah, I'm sure Dean's going to walk him through it, but they have their little moment of understanding here. And from this point on, Dean doesn't really, he's lost the last of that reckless streak that he's had since the beginning of the season. It's already been a while since he's dispensed with the whole I'm cashing in my dying wishes attitude, but he's beyond that fake bravado too now. He still hasn't confronted what he's truly afraid of here and what it means for him to be going to hell, because once he does, he's going to have to confront his own feelings of why he even let himself make this deal in the first place, what drove him and compelled him to think that he had no other choice but to make this deal and sell his own soul for Sam's. And he's even more terrified of that than he is of hell. So, yeah. I still think Dean primarily dropped the act of bravado wasn't because he's any less scared. I think he was doing it almost out of reflex, but the fact that it was upsetting Sam, the fact that Sam couldn't bear it, that he was hurting Sam, not helping him by putting this attitude on, is the only reason he dropped it. And honestly, glad he did. Glad Sam was there to push him to that and said something about it, because it's the first step in being able to really confront himself. Everything from how they were raised, the watch out for your brother that Dean was raised with, responsibility that was lumped on him for Sam's safety in all things, at all times, for his entire life. That's going to get picked apart beginning in the next episode. Season 3, Episode 8, A Very Supernatural Christmas. Ho, ho, ho. But if you're going to pick apart Dean and what drove him to make that sacrifice in the first place, their childhood is a really good place to start. It's just a little bit weird doing a Christmas episode at the end of March. Until then, you can find me on Twitter and Tumblr at MittensMorgul or at SPNGeorge. I'm almost never on Twitter, though, for fandom stuff, but I am there for, like, messaging. Hi. Or you can find me on Discord at Mittens hashtag 4865. I still have the server there, so if you'd like to join, just send me a message and I'll send you an invite. Or you can email me at mittensmorgul@gmail.com. I'm happy to talk to everybody about everything all the time, so come say hello. Sorry this episode goes so short, but oh my gosh, I'm just dragging my brain through this one. I have a post on my Tumblr that probably sums up everything I I could have just read that post out and been like, please just go watch the episode. I'll just link that post in the thing. And my God, cats. Honestly? I live in a cat racetrack. What can I say? I shall go nap now. Have a good night.